26 December 1949. Medicated oils and butter. Sometime in September or October 1944, Bhagavan received a small book on Ayurveda, written by Achanta Lakshmipati, which he read and, in accordance with the prescription therein, got Kapura Talam prepared, a medicinal oil prepared from camphor, etc., and began using it for the muscular pain in his legs. Observing this, some devotees said that Narayana Talam was better. Some said that Maha Narayana Talam was much better. Of course, Maha Narayana. Everybody in India is a doctor, pretty much. And Bhagavad Village, one time I was sick, you know, they have these type of doctors who can feel your pulse. Mm-hmm. By feeling your pulse?
Yes, yes.
So I was sick, and I was bedridden, you know. Everyone who came to visit felt my pulse. So, oh, you'll be all right in 3 days. Or something. Everyone had something. And they did the pulse thing, you know.
So was any of them, were any of them right?
I got better. Everybody has some medical suggestion, right? Most Indians, I don't know. Usually passed down through families and things, probably, right? For this problem, that problem. After hearing these suggestions, Krishna Swami got exasperated and said, "How many medicated oils can we apply? However much we rub them on, the pain is not abated." Bhagavan remarked, "Oh ho! When they are discussing about the relative merits of the various medicated oils, why do you feel exasperated?" Krishna Swami, "Some treatment is being given. Why do they not keep quiet? How can we manage if everyone suggests a different remedy? How often have we applied those medicated oils? Has the pain been cured thereby?" Bhagavan, "No, but then, you never rub that oil with the desire that the pain should be cured. If you had done it with a strong will, why would that pain not leave us? As the pain has not disappeared, they are suggesting other remedies. Why would they suggest all these things if the pain were cured?" Krishna Swami, "There is some relief now by the use of the Karpura Tela. Why do they bother us by suggesting all those other remedies?" Bhagavan, "But then you are sure that the pain will disappear completely with this medicine?" Krishna Swami, "We can't say, but we shall try." Bhagavan, "Yes, that is the thing. If you apply the medicine with the desire that the pain should disappear completely, it will certainly disappear. But then you are afraid that if it disappears, you will not be allowed to touch Bhagavan's legs. That is why you rub the oil with the desire that the pain should not disappear completely. That being so, why will the pain..." He's blaming him now for the
pain. Yeah, I know. Poor Krishna's mom, yeah.
One afternoon, at 3 o'clock, a devotee who was going to Madras gave a small tin containing some ointment and said that if that medicine were applied to Bhagavan's legs, the pain would decrease. And that if Bhagavan would continuously use it, he would bring a dozen tins of it from Madras. Bhagavan replied saying, "Enough. The Kapura Talam I am using is now adequate. Why do I require such costly medicines? If diet is properly regulated, no medicine will be required. When these medicines are used, the ailment apparently disappears, but it starts again. That is because of some irregularity in diet, and that can't be helped." The devotee said, "If that is so, it will be all right if the diet is suitably regulated. Why not do that at least?" "Yes, sir, that is good, but how can I regulate my diet? Whenever I think of having a simple diet with pepper water, They will say that there is a Bhiksha day. I cannot avoid vadai and payasam, milk pudding, prepared for the occasion. When the servers come to Bhagavan, they serve much more than they do to others. No doubt that is done out of devotion, but what to do? I must eat it. If food is thus taken, it will result in some ailment or other. How will that ailment be cured by medicines? It must be cured of its own accord. Once when I was on the hill, I was suffering from a severe cough. Many tonics were given, but they were of no use. I came down and stayed here. I do not know whether it was because of the air that blows here over the medicinal herbs of the hills, but it somehow got cured of its own accord. The forest itself became full of chavanaprash, a specific Ayurvedic medicine for cough. You know that chavanaprash? Very popular. Look at like a paste mixed with all these things, right? And they usually they take it with milk and mix it with warm milk or something. But you can just eat it straight. You had it, right?
I don't know.
We've had it here. People bring it now and then. Or used to. It's a little sweet. Maybe they put molasses or something in it.
Yes. It's good.
The present ailment will also get cured likewise. This tin is enough. Please do not bring any more, said Bhagavan. A devotee said, Swami, some people, after they come out of the state of samadhi, live on butter only. We have actually seen some such people. How do they manage it? Like Suresh.
Yes.
You know Suresh?
Suresh lives on butter.
Well, he's got this theory about butter. You should eat a lot of it. So.
I'm a big fan of butter, but man. It was like a stick of butter on a piece of toast.
Big layer, like butter. Something you had somewhere. But I don't think it's a samadhi reason. For that purpose, we have actually seen such people. How do they manage it? Bhagavan replied with a laugh, what is that if a person puts a handful of butter on a leaf and eats it? How will he have any appetite afterwards? For that purpose, one need not come out of the state of samadhi. Anyone can eat it. There are several herbs. If they are eaten, one will not feel hungry at all. No, in fact, they can make a lot of money in the U.S. with the diet people. Right? Diet.
They used to put
diet
pills with speed in them back in the 80s, right?
Really? Yeah. So that, I don't know.
It suppresses appetite. Yeah.
And makes them active, right?
Yeah. It makes them addicted too, though.
I don't think that speed was addictive, right?
I think it was. They had to stop selling those pills, right?
If they are eaten, they will not feel hungry at all. Some people keep those herbs in their pockets or in their bags and go on eating them one after another. How could they have any appetite thereafter? People then say that this Swami is living without food, and he is a great soul. He thereby becomes a Swami.
By what?
He becomes a Swami by eating those herbs and pretending he's not eating at all. There's that famous Indian novelist, Narayan or something. He wrote the book, the novel about this. Is it called The Swami or?
Oh, the one who's standing in water or something.
Yeah, well, he was just a tourist guy, you know, sort of a hustler. And so then he sort of faked being a Swami, thought this would be more easier and more profitable. Do you remember that?
I remember it. Yeah.
So he went on with it, and then he was nothing. And then it sort of built up, and he was not eating, but he kept food behind this place, and he would eat. But then it came up that the place was in drought, and people had no, you know, couldn't grow their crops, and they kept coming in praying to him to stop eating. And actually, he did stop, and he actually became like a.
Yeah.
You know, because he did stop eating, and he just was ready to die, and he did go stand in the river. You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
And then everybody, and it did. Then he felt water beneath the. You know, he put his feet like a foot into the stand. He felt some water flowing in the end into the river. So there was water coming. But he actually did become sincere in the end. You know, nice. Read the book. Some famous, he's a world famous novelist.
Yeah. Narayan's the last name, I think.
Yeah. He started out as a fake. Like a guy I met in Canada years ago, he went to India, he used to smoke a lot of ganja and hashish and everything, and he met some people in Benares doing it, so he joined them, and they had ochre robes on. So he put on an ochre robe. But then he started studying Sanskrit, and he went to some place, and he became like a regular.
Did he continue with the Ganges?
Well, he was for 10 years in India, you know, and he studied Sanskrit, and he started doing sadhana and everything in a serious way. But then he quit it and took it off and came back to Canada. I don't know what happened to him. Bookbinding. December 30th, 1949. Some people bring ancient and sacred books in a very bad condition to Bhagavan with a request to examine its contents. Simultaneously with the examination of the contents, Bhagavan used to arrange the pages properly, paste them together, paste the torn bits, and also write in his own hand the missing portions of the text, and thus give the book a new appearance. Some people used to send those loose leaves of a book tied together with a string with the request to set them right after examination. On such occasions, Bhagavan used to cut the papers properly, paste them together, stitch them, get them bound, and on the cover paste a piece of white paper sufficient to write the name of the book in letters like pearls. Underline it with red ink and thus preserve the book carefully. I have one book somewhere on the left, repaired. And the same thing, he brought a white paper and he wrote the name of the book, a little one. I wonder what happened to it now. In 1942, G. Subbaramaya sent here an old copy of a Mukta Malayada, written by Krishna Devaraya, with a request to the ashram that Bhagavan should read it and that thereafter it should be kept in the ashram library. The covers of the book were loose, soiled, and badly torn. Bhagavan immediately set the whole thing properly, bound it neatly, pasted a white paper on the cover, wrote the name in bold letters that appeared better than print, drew a line with red ink under it, made it look like a new book, and pasted it on, and passed it on to me, saying, "See how it looks now." The book was as beautiful as a newly married bride. And so I wrote some verses about it, and reverently placed them in the hands of Bhagavan. Sometime in June 1943, you remember, I was entrusted with the writing work relating to all Telugu matters in the presence of Bhagavan. In those days when paper was scarce because of the world war, I brought from your house all the type papers relating to your book on banking, as they were typed only on one side and so could be used for writing on the back. I used those papers to copy in Telugu script the Ramana Puja Vidhanam, written in Nagari script and prepared by Jagadishwara Sastri. Bhagavan saw it and asked me where I had got the paper from. I told him the facts. You have done a good thing. Others would merely throw away such papers. We can use them for rough work. I always use the papers which are thrown away as useless by others. When pages are written only on one side, the written sides could be pasted together so that the unwritten sides of the page could be used profitably and bound together into a new book. We did like that quite a number of times. Why allow them to go to waste, Balaram? A devotee inquired if it was a fact that Bhagavan had picked up sheets of paper that were thrown away in the dustbin by Nayana, Ganapati Muni, and bound them all together into a book. Bhagavan replied, yes, that is a fact. You know, Nayana was with us for some time in Palakoto. When he was going away from there, he threw away all the waste sheets. He was accustomed to writing only on about half of his sheet and leaving the rest blank. There are quite a number of books which are half written like that by him. When that is so with books, would he care for mere sheets? A number of such sheets were thrown in the dustbin. After taking food in the noon, Madhava and myself went out as usual and noticed the heap. As we did not like to waste them, we picked up the useful sheets, cut them suitably, stitched them together into a book, and kept it carefully. That was almost like a newly bound book. After some time, Nayana returned and wanted a notebook to write something. I asked Madhava to give him that bound book, and he gave it. I kept silent, laughing to myself. However, Madhava said, Nayana, these are the sheets of paper which you threw away as useless. Bhagavan saw them and asked me to pick out the useful ones, which I did, and bound them into this notebook. Nayana was very much surprised. I usually stitch notebooks with such papers only, said Bhagavan. 3rd January 1950. Where to stay, where to go. Sometime in 1943-44, one of the devotees who is familiar amongst the circle of devotees built a house in Ramananagar, and before the housewarming ceremony approached Bhagavan and said in an undertone, it would be nice if Bhagavan could come to my place. With a smile, Bhagavan said, what a request. Where is Bhagavan to come? Why not think that whoever comes for the function is Bhagavan himself? If all people come, it is not something like Bhagavan himself is it not something like Bhagavan himself coming? Please go. Finish the housewarming ceremony. And sending him away with those words, Bhagavan remarked to those nearby, do you see? He said, Bhagavan must go over there. Everyone says the same thing. Where can I go? Another devotee said, is it not a fact that someone said that a temple for Bharata Mata was being constructed and that Bhagavan should lay the foundation stone? Yes, yes, it must be about 5 or 6 years ago. There was no invitation, nothing whatsoever. It was, however, published in the papers that Bhagavan would be attending the ceremony and that the first class berth had also been reserved. Several people came and asked me whether I was going. And I gave a reply, where to stay and where to go. There is no place to which I could go, said Bhagavan. Arrangements were made for going to Tirupati also, weren't they? Asked another devotee. Bhagavan replied, yes, it is true. That was when I was in the Virupaksha cave. At that time, I was not covering the upper part of the body with anything. For some unknown reason, the trouble from mosquitoes was unusually great that year. Jayaraman brought a good shawl and pressed me to cover my body with that. I did not even touch it. He waited for some time. The shawl remained folded. The mosquito trouble continued unabated. Unable to bear the nuisance, the people near me conferred amongst themselves and without the knowledge of outsiders made all the preparations for going to Tirupati. They told me that we should go by this way and should come back by that way and the like. I nodded my head in assent to all that they said. They fixed an auspicious day for the journey, packed everything, and before starting came to me saying, "Swami, shall we start?" I said, "Yes, do go and come back." "What about Bhagavan?" "Where can Bhagavan go?" "Where is he staying?" I said. They said, "We are unable to bear the mosquito trouble, you see." I said, "If you are not able to bear it, you may go and come back. Is it for my sake that you are going? Did I say that I was not able to bear the mosquito nuisance?" What more could they say? They felt that it was no use arguing further, gave up the journey, and began pressing me to cover my body with the shawl. Jairam's son, Pichandi, was at the time a very young fellow. He used to come every day covering himself with an old rug. As I felt that they would not leave me in peace until I covered my body to avoid the mosquito bites, I told them that I would wear the old rug if they gave the young man the new shawl in exchange. What could they do? Unwillingly, they exchanged the new rug for the old one, and I covered myself with the rug. That was the beginning of my covering the body with anything. When I began covering myself with that prickly type of rug, must be like burlap. There used to be a burlap Swami at Revelation. Did you see him? I don't know. He just used to hold a bag up on, like this, you know. Him. If he dropped it, he would, he'd be nude, you know, but he'd just walk around holding it like this. A burlap.
Oh, okay.
You know, he just cut the top, you know, so it's just a, he'd walk around. It must have been the burlap, they say rug, but they would feed him in the ashram sometimes. They'd bring him in and feed him with burlap on me. That's probably, you say rug, but it's probably that material. That was the beginning of my covering the body with anything. When I began covering myself with that prickly type of rug, the mosquitoes did not dare to come anywhere near me. "It used to be warm too," said Bhagavan. Another person asked, "It seems that someone requested permission to take you around the whole of the country for propaganda and for preaching." Bhagavan replied, "Yes, that was Swami Rajaswarananda himself. You know, he used to live here for some years ago. At that time, he was drawing up plans for touring the whole of India, to which important places we should go for delivering lectures, how a special train was to be arranged for travel, how many days to stay in the various places, and so on. I used to hear all that," he said, "and kept quiet. He mistook my silence for consent. Ultimately, he arranged to travel by first class, packed all things, and said, 'Swami, shall we start?' 'Yes, why not?' 'Go and come back,' I said. 'Well, what about Bhagavan?' he said. 'Me? Why?' I said. 'You must preach the essence of the Advaita to people in the whole of India, Swami.' He said, 'Is that so? What can I do? Where can I stay? Where to go? I have no place to go.' I said." He was taken aback. During the early days of the arrival of motor cars into this country, several people used to buy cars, bring them here and say, 'Bhagavan, if Bhagavan gets into the car but once, we will take it around the hill and return immediately. Please get in.' Where was I to go, getting into such things?" said Bhagavan. "See what is stated in the Maha Vyaka Ratnamala. What is there for me to do? Where am I to go? What am I to accept? And what am I to discard? Since I pervade the entire universe, like the waters of the final deluge. They still do that. They bring the new cars to Ramanashram, devotees. They try to get a priest to bless it or something, then they drive around the mountain. I've seen that, right? January 1950. Boyhood days at Madurai. I've already written to you about my going to Tiruchuli in 1945. You know, she's just writing about all the incidents because there's not much access to Bhagavan now. When the Sarvadikari started for the place to do repairs to the birthplace of Bhagavan, and how on that occasion several devotees, including a number of ladies, accompanied him, and how, after my return, Bhagavan told me several incidents of his boyhood. At that time we had also seen the house in Madurai where Bhagavan had self-realization. When I told Bhagavan that an old lady by the name Subhama related some more incidents about his life there, he pressed me to tell him all about it. I said she told me that she was living in the same street when Bhagavan ran away from his house in Madurai. That Bhagavan showed even then, by his conduct, glimpses of his feelings of equality with all human beings, and that there were several incidents at the time to indicate it. What are they? Asked Bhagavan. I said, it seems that there was not sufficient supply of water in the house in which Bhagavan lived, and so water had to be brought from the opposite house. That sometimes the Bhagavan used to help his aunt by bringing water and by doing several odds and ends of the household work. Bhagavan said, yes, Auntie could not lift any big vessel. The water she brought in a small vessel was at times found insufficient for the household. So I used to fetch water in a big vessel. So what? I said, it seems that your mother felt a little annoyed when she heard of this and reported to have remarked that her son was being made to carry heavy things. When she came to Madurai once, she too had to fetch water. She could not lift the big vessel and requested Bhagavan to fetch water in the big vessel. While bringing it, Bhagavan is said to have remarked, you found fault with Auntie. What have you done now? Is that all true? Laughing, Bhagavan said, yes, yes. But what of that? There are municipal taps now, but in those days there was a lot of difficulty about water. The Vaigai River is at a long distance from Chokanatha Street. It used to be very near to the house where we first stayed. When we were there, we used to bathe in the Vaigai River every day. Now, I don't know what house we were first day. You know, when Bhagavan first came to Madurai.
So they were in a separate house when they first came to Madurai? They didn't just go to the...
Yeah, it looks like, you know, the uncle was living in another house. Mm. Probably rented, you know. Then they moved to this Chokanatha street house. I know he went to the Scots Middle School when he first came, but they teared that school down. I saw that before they came. When we were there, we used to bathe in the Vaigai River every day. As summer advanced, the water in the river would dry up. We then used to go there in the evenings and excavate enough sand in the riverbed so that a big vessel could be dipped into it. People do that still, they dig holes, right, in the riverbed. Yeah. Subsequently, we played about in the sands. By the time we finished our games, the sand ditch would be filled with water. We would bathe in that water and return home. The ditches that we excavated every day were very useful for other people also. I said, it seems, even the playthings of Mahatma serve as useful things for others. Bhagavan said, that's all right, but tell me, you have gone to the temple in Varadaraja Puramalu, haven't you? You must have noticed that there are three parapet walls for each of the three stories. Very often all of us boys used to go to the third story and play hide and seek and other games. A big tank could be seen from the window of the third story. We used to go to that tank off and on and have competitions in swimming. I invariably used to win in the competitions. That tank is on the way leading to Tiruparankudandram. I said, I read in Ramana Leela about a feast that Bhagavan had with other boys in Tiruparankudandram. It was, however, not possible for us to go there. Bhagavan said, that is on the way to Tiruchuri. Only you have to take a little diversion. There are similar places around Madurai, like Pasumalai, Nagamalai, Anugamalai, and several others. We used to go there sometimes. The greatness could be found in the Halasya Mahamyam. I asked, is it a fact that you were going to the Aligarh coil also? Bhagavan replied, yes, sir. That is about 12 miles from Madurai. The temple is a very big one. There every day, Sarkari Pongal is offered twice to the Lord. It was excellent. Once when I went there, I was given a little of it, along with others. I wish I could have more of it. I felt, however, shy to ask for more, so I kept quiet. You know what happened when I went there another time? The children of one of the Archakas were going home for the holidays. I accompanied them and stayed with them for the whole day. On that day, it was their turn for the Archana. Their house was about 2 furlongs from the temple. After the night puja was over, they got a big plateful of pongal as their share. On seeing me, they felt I was a sturdy fellow and could easily carry it, and so they put the plate on my head and went ahead chit-chatting amongst themselves. You know how heavy it was? All the muscles of my neck began to ache. It was nighttime. It was also dark. The plate must not fall down because it contained God's prasadam. What could I do? I felt that it was a punishment for wanting to have some more pongal when I came last time. And so I somehow carried it until I reached the house. I said, did not any one of them offer to carry it for a little distance? Bhagavan replied, no. They were walking and were completely absorbed in their discussions about some of their own affairs. How would they think about me? I said, perhaps Bhagavan did not say that it was heavy and he could not carry it. Bhagavan remarked, how could I do that? It was preordained that I should carry it, and so I carried it. Subsequently, they gave me a big lump of the pongal on a leaf. When I ate some of it, I got the feeling of aversion to it. It was, however, prasadam. And as it could not be thrown away, I somehow managed to eat it. None of the others touched it even. They gave it away to the servant next morning. It is the same thing with everything. If there is ample supply, no one wants it. I remark. So Bhagavan carried the plate with the same feelings of Jara Bharat. He had when he carried the palanquin. Bhagavan said, oh, what of that? They merely felt that I was robust and could easily carry it. What else did they know? So saying, he changed the topic and began telling us about wrestling bouts, playing with balls, and other boys' games. All those things have been mentioned in Ramana Leela. You know, his older brother, they used to roll him up and throw him like a ball. Bug on.
Yeah. They rolled Bug on up and threw him like a ball.
Yeah. You would kind of throw it at each other. That's what he said once. 20th January 1950. Mukti Kanta, some time ago, Puttambaka, Sri Krishnaya, a devotee of Bhagavan, wrote the biography of Dhanurdasa, who was a devotee of Lord Sri Ranganatha, in verse and dedicated it to Bhagavan. After Bhagavan had graciously accepted this book of verses, he wrote some more poems separately and offered them to Bhagavan. The gist of the first poem was, Swami, my Kriti Kanya, comparing the poems to a young maiden, has refused to accept anyone else but Bhagavan as her suitor. I have decided to offer you humbly this maiden. Please accept her and bless us. And the last poem he wrote, you have become my son-in-law. I have partaken of the marriage feast with you. I have thus become blessed. I will take leave of you. Just because you have wooed and won Mukti Kanya, comparing Mukti to the maiden, please do not neglect my beloved child. When this happened, I was not in town. As soon as I returned, Bhagavan told me all about it. Look, it seems I have already been married, Mukti Kanya. He has ordered me not to neglect his daughter. Read this. So saying, Bhagavan made me read the poems. Apart from this, you to narrate this event humorously. Later on, when the author of this book came here, he used to say jocularly, my father-in-law has come. Have you seen him? Sometime later, when Mahadeva Sastri came, Bhagavan showed him these poems and made him read them. Ramarama, a devotee of Bhagavan, not knowing that those poems were only fit for diversion, got Bhagavan permission and took the book for copying. The next morning, when I went there, I saw the book in Bhagavan's hands. Seeing me, Bhagavan said with a slight smile, see that lady sitting over there? She took this book yesterday, saying that she wanted to copy these Kriti Kanya Samarapana poems. This evening, she brought the copied poems, saying that she wanted to read them out to me. That's enough. Don't read them. Keep them with you and do parayana every day, I said. The other day when Mahadeva came, I showed him these poems for fun. He read them here. What more was needed? She must have thought that Swami was very fond of them. She copied them immediately. Is it not enough she really wanted them? Her real intention was only to read them in the hall. Saying this, Bhagavan laughed. I said, if anybody writes about Bhagavan in a humorous way, that he is a thief, a simpleton, a deceiver, and Bhagavan starts joking about it, then some people begin imagining that Bhagavan likes it. Bhagavan replied, yes, yes. If the writer who had written these poems had also added that the reading of these verses would give them the merit of giving away their daughter in marriage, Kanya Dhana Phalam, then it would indeed have been very apt. 4 or 5 years ago, the wife of Raghunatha Iyer, a devotee, gave Bhagavan a book named Ramana Kalyanam, written by their son. It seems that her husband was a playmate of Bhagavan in his younger days. The whole book was full of songs. In it, Bhagavan was depicted as a bridegroom with a Mukti Kanta as his bride. One day, he started to sing all those songs in the hall. Everything that pertained to the marriage ceremony was described in it in detail, such as the bridal procession, the exchange of garlands, etc. At that point, Bhagavan, looking at us, said, have you all observed me getting married? Here am I, playing with the flowers, exchanging garlands, hearing songs, and getting married in the proper way. These people are all grief-stricken because Swami has not been married all these days. In this way, they have at last, made up for the deficiency. Just listen to them. And Bhagavan laughed.
And Bhagavan reviewed a lot of these letters, right? As she wrote
some
them.
Of the, yeah.
But at the end, I'm assuming he didn't review any.
Of course, yeah. Yeah. But some in the beginning, Bhagavan, he gave them to. I don't think he said that much, you know. Like with talks.
Right.
He wasn't sure whether he got the translation right or. He would ask Bhagavan. Maybe that was more particular to the teachings or anything. And they kept it, the book in the old hall. And the talk, there were three big books. You know, he was, what, from 1935 to 1939? He used to keep them in the hall, right there. He'd pick it up when he came in and, you know, made the notes.
Right.
All the books were published in English, mostly, by the way, in the early days, because they're all English. Educated devotees going there.
But he wrote in Tamil. It was all written in Tamil.
Yeah, he wrote in Tamil, Malayalam, and you know, in Telugu. He can write in those. Even he knew English. He read the paper every day in English. People would ask him questions in English. He would reply, like in Tamil, and have a translator translate it. But he understood the translation and even would correct them if they say something. But didn't prefer talking English. Although he did a few times, like chat with Major Chadwick and everything. Then you can see him, Chadwick translated a lot of his poems to English, and he made the correction. He did it in poems. Poems of Ramana Maharshi. You see, Chadwick had a book. And Bhagavan corrected that in English. You can see, they have it in the archive where he crossed out a word and put another word there. Mm. Corrected the English. I knew it, I think. I didn't prefer to talk in it.
And this is written by a woman?
Yeah, sorry, Nagama. I met her. In fact, she mentioned about what a medium in the last part.
Oh,
okay. There's one recollection. I worked on this one, you know, in Polish. There were two books.
Oh.
Yeah, and we put them together in this one.